series is a little bit different when the home court shifts. Toronto runs Milwaukee out of the building.
And could West Coast games be starting even earlier?
And we've got quick hits around the league. Terry Stotts getting an extension and the all-rookie teams announced. It's the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Let's do it.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. On Wednesday, I'm Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast.
And I'm John Corrales. I cover the Celtics for MassLive.com, and I am the co-host of the Locked On Celtics podcast. Find me at Reds_Army_John on Twitter.
And we're going to talk about this game coming up in just a second, but first, today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com, be there, do that, get rewarded. All right, John, we have the game now in Toronto. The series has shifted there, and oh yeah, home court really matters in the NBA as Toronto wins 120-102.
I don't know if you've heard this, Jake, but role players play better at home. I feel like somebody should have mentioned that on a podcast before. I think I'm the first person.
Yeah, the only person who's ever said that in the history of the NBA. Yeah, I think that basically like sums up this game a little bit. If you look at the Toronto bench and what they did in this one, for guys who hadn't shown up at all really in this series, makes a bit of a difference, I guess.
Yeah, Norm Powell getting you 18 off the bench, Ibaka 17 off the bench. I mean, this, I saw somebody tweet this out. The Raptors bench scored more in this game than they did in the first four games against Philly combined. So the Raptors bench last season was one of their strengths. This season, not so much. Van Vliet has been mostly MIA. Powell has been a nothing. Ibaka has been up and down. Those three guys combined to give you, 48 points? That's a monster number. Meanwhile, the Milwaukee Bucks bench, which has been huge for them in the playoffs. I mean, I watched them decimate the Celtics. George Hill did nothing, a minus 17, 5 points. Ilyasova had a couple of moments, but really only 7 points. Brogdon, nothing, 4 points. Connaughton, 3 points, just negatives all across the board there. The Raptors did a lot of good things to slow Giannis down, but the Bucks still had a shot up until mid third quarter. It was the bench all the way around that really made the difference in this game.
Yeah, the Toronto bench outscored Milwaukee's 48-23, and when you're looking at an 18-point game, there's a bit of a difference right there, and you could almost say it's that. This is the first time Van Vliet has shown up since Game 1 against the Orlando Magic. He hasn't had double figures since that game. He had 13 in this. That's just big. He was plus 25 on the night in 25 minutes worth of action. Like, yeah, it was just these guys. Although you mentioned how the Toronto Raptors did a lot of good things. And look, Kawhi Leonard in this game, for clearly being injured, and it was just so apparent, was almost heroic on defense at times. It also helps when you basically don't need to guard Eric Bledsoe, who just cannot shoot whatsoever in this series. And then it allows you to either double Giannis or at least have a help defender shading him and can kind of take him out of his rhythm. Bledsoe was 2 of 7 from the field in the game tonight. 5 points, and then Giannis finishes 9 of 17, 25 points, 10 rebounds, but did he feel that impactful out there?
No, not at all. What they're doing, a great job of really walling him off. Like, that's the thing that everybody talks about. Starts with Kawhi Leonard at the point of the defense. Him, his long arms, his defensive ability, even injured, just it really doesn't give Giannis any room to take off, doesn't give him a chance to get that spin move off. And the way they're helping, you can help off of Bledsoe, like you said, and they're really taking away the spin. They're taking away the Euro step. They're taking away all of the signature things that Giannis really likes to go to. For the Bucks to be the Bucks in capital, all caps, they need Bledsoe to be better, obviously, and they need Brook Lopez to be impactful. They got 25 minutes out of Brook Lopez, only 10 in the second half, and he did nothing. When you play Brook Lopez off the floor, it takes away a very important spacer and a very important rim protector, and it really allows the Raptors to defend Giannis well, and it really allows them to attack on the other end. So they've done a good job on those two fronts. I mean, it's very impressive.
Yeah, no, the Brook Lopez thing is big, particularly on the defensive side. Like, he was gone for a while in this game, and you could see Toronto kind of go into a different mindset on this. And it's like, I don't think of him as a rim protector exactly, but they need a guy like that down low to at least kind of help with all of that. And then the spacing just for them offensively tonight, I didn't think was great. Like, I don't, part of it is they seem just a little out of sorts, and maybe that was the defense on Giannis kind of taking them out of their rhythm. But you saw guys in wrong places, running into each other a little bit. Just not like the Bucks, like you said, capital Bucks, who've been the best team in the league all year. We also probably need to talk about Marc Gasol, who's decided to wake up over these past two games, eight quarters, and has been outstanding, because he was rough the first two games of the series, and now he's started to round into form, and I don't know, getting into more of a rhythm or something like that. But going 6 of 11 and putting up 17 points with 7 assists and 5 rebounds is a way to get it done for Toronto. They need these other guys to step up, especially with Kawhi Leonard injured like he is.
Yeah, I think Gasol being willing to take the three, like he hasn't always been fully willing to take the three. That's a big deal for the Raptors, because he can hit those. Obviously, he hit 3 of 6 in this game. The other thing that they've done is really one of the Marc Gasol strengths is get him the ball in the high post and run action to cut and use his passing. There was a great backdoor cut by Kawhi with Gasol in the high post. Middleton was helping and aggressively overplaying, and then all Kawhi did was just set him up and then boom, cut backdoor, and Gasol knew it was coming. They just have this chemistry there, and he hit him, pow, layup. It was just beautiful. Simple, but having a guy like that in the high post can really help facilitate some easy baskets, and that really can deflate a defense. The Bucks defense has been very, very good, but having somebody like Gasol at the top that can pick you apart like that, and to have guys that are cutting, I'm very Celtic-centric, obviously. It's one of the things that really I thought killed the Celtics in the previous round is they did a lot more standing. They didn't do a lot of cutting. With the Raptors cutting behind these defenders, these aggressive Bucks defenders, it really maximizes what you're getting out of Gasol.
Yeah, and it also pulls some of that length out of the lane for Milwaukee, and like, there's just arms everywhere, and if you can get a pair out of there, it makes it easier getting to the rim, which is kind of what this team needed, just, again, easier offense, because at times it could be a slog for them. Kyle Lowry was also great in this game, 25 yeah. points on the night, 6 assists, 5 rebounds. It's nice to see him stepping up in this series and being like the Kyle Lowry that we kind of all know and really love, who we don't often get to see in the playoffs. Even just him kind of having this game has been important, because he kind of comes and goes, and you know what you're going to get from Kawhi, a great game, but maybe this team comes and goes with how Lowry plays.
I think that's a huge thing. I mean, I'm starting to think that we could put this playoff Kyle Lowry thing to bed. Like, he's had his problems before. Now that they're here, and I don't know why, I'm not obviously there to ask these kinds of questions, but you have to think that having gone through some of his struggles earlier in this postseason and still winning, and you can thank Kawhi for some of this, that the pressure is now kind of off, and like, he's gone through the bad games. They've won. Kawhi has carried them. And now he feels probably that, okay, I could just play basketball. And without that pressure on him, now he's just playing. And I think it's a very important development for Kyle Lowry, that he can feel free to go play and not worry about things. And you're seeing the results. I mean, he did everything. He did everything in this game. And 10 of 10 from the line. I mean, that aggressiveness, getting there, attacking. There were times, I mean, just in the middle of the lane, taking all sorts of hits, getting shots off, still hitting from three. He's a little bit of everything, like I said. And really, most importantly, only one turnover. Just a brilliant game from Lowry. Yeah, it's just a brilliant game for him.
Yeah, well, because if you turn the ball over against this Milwaukee team, they're going to get out and run, and they're going to score a lot of easy points, and you just cannot let that happen. And Milwaukee only having 13 in the fast break in this game is huge. Like, don't give this really, really good team easy, easy points. Lowry just felt impactful, too. You know, the stat line's tremendous, but just you watch the game and you're like, oh, that dude's really helping them win. Which is somewhat of the case, I guess, maybe for Chris Middleton, too, who had a really good night. 30 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds on 11 of 15 shooting. He made 4 threes in this one. They just got no help. Only Middleton, Giannis, and Mirotić were the people who scored in double figures for the Bucks. And yeah, that's because the Toronto Raptors did what they needed to do and kind of played their game.
That's it. I mean, it's very simple. That it does, again, I mean, it does come down to role players in some of these instances. It really does. Like, George Hill has been just wonderful throughout these playoffs. This is more like the George Hill that I think people expected, not like the guy that's been awesome. But at the same time, when you look at Norm Powell giving you 18 points on 6 of 18 shooting, even though it was only 6 of 18, he still found ways to score. Van Vliet giving you what he gave you, Ibaka coming through. Those guys haven't been reliable. So when they come through for you, yeah, this is how the Raptors are going to win games. You got your gutty game from Kawhi. You got something from – you didn't get much from Siakam, but you got something from Gasol. Lowry was brilliant, and now your bench steps up. Like, that's the perfect recipe for Toronto. The Bucks, they need their bench to step up. Their depth is a strength. That's really what it boils down to. Giannis didn't have the best 25-point, 10-rebound game, but – they still had an opportunity in the third quarter to keep it close and give Giannis the opportunity to take over. And then it just fell apart when these other guys couldn't hit shots. We talk a lot about all of these little things and these backdoor cuts. It really does sometimes come down to making shots. And the Bucks bench just did not make their shots. Bledsoe, not a big shot maker anyway. Ilyasova should be hitting shots. Brogdon is, you know, how often is Brogdon going to shoot 2 of 11?
Yeah.
Like, that's he's a 50, 40, 90 guy this season. Like, that's an aberration. A lot of aberrations here. And so we got to figure out, like, what's going to carry over now to game 5. I mean, kudos to the Raptors for making this a series. I'm surprised that they won tonight. I thought after that third game where they really struggled to come through in 2 overtimes and with Kawhi obviously hurt, I didn't know that they would come out in this game. So it's very impressive, but it's going to boil down to, and I hate to be this simplistic about it, but these guys, the bench needs to hit shots.
Yeah,
if the Bucks don't hit shots, then forget it.
It's going to be look, sometimes it's just a make or miss league, and it's as simple as that. I think they've got to find a way to get Eric Bledsoe playing better and building that guy's confidence up. And if it's not, maybe you need Ilyasova or Hill or some of these other guys taking more than 2-5 shots, what it is. I think that's kind of the big adjustment I'd look at. But if you think Bledsoe is going to be the Eric Bledsoe who's an all-star, then yeah, they can get back on track. So there's going to be a lot more coming from this series as it shifts back to Milwaukee for game 5 tied, which is at least fun because we're getting one competitive series in the playoffs. Do want to mention that the Himalaya podcast app is the way to get the Locked On NBA podcast Monday through Friday, giving you everything you need to know around the association. Download the Himalaya podcast app from your app store and subscribe to Locked On NBA. The show's also brought to you today by Untuck It. Dads come in all kinds of shapes and sizes, and so should their shirts, like tall, short, slim, and relaxed. Ever wonder why your father's button-ups look so long and baggy at the end of the day? It can be hard for guys to pull off a casual, untucked look that isn't sloppy. That's where Untuck It comes in. Untuck It is the solution that fits just right. Their shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to untuckit.com, promo code NBA, to get 20% off. Again, go to untuckit.com, use the promo code NBA to get 20% off. All right, John, I've been yawning as we've been recording a little bit. I made myself some coffee here at around 9:30 because we're recording this podcast after the game tips or after the game ends. Sorry, I got to stay awake and alert to be a professional and to watch this. It's rough at times, though, isn't it? Particularly you on the East Coast.
Yeah, I mean, the staying up for these late games, it used to be extraordinarily difficult. Staying up to do a podcast and watch these and be professionally invested in these games, you could be up until 2-3 in the morning.
Easy.
Luckily I have the ability to sleep in most days, and it's not the worst, but I'm not a typical person when it comes to this. It's tough for East Coast people to watch their teams out west, even in the mountain time. These games start late. 10:30 p.m. starts are difficult to sit through. So
For anyone who's up at like 6:30 in the morning, which is kind of like a normal time to wake up and go to your 9-to-5 job. And I have one. I do this on the side, for, you know, because it's fun and I like basketball. I'm up at 6:30 in the morning every day for work. When these games come on at 9:30, 10:30, and like it ends around midnight to 1 o'clock, somewhere in that range, it's absolutely brutal.
Yeah. So the reason we're bringing this up is that is today, or not today, Tuesday, on the Today Show, the commissioner, Adam Silver, in talking about the league's ratings and how LeBron James leaving the East hurt the TV ratings, he mentioned that the West Coast games start too late for a lot of the viewers. And so the quote is, and he says it right here, the reason I look a little bit tired is a lot of our games are in the West. It's late at night, and I recognize most people choose to go to sleep at a reasonable time. And so from a rating standpoint, not having LeBron in the playoffs, not having him in the East, has clearly impacted ratings. And so he goes on to mention that there's a possibility that they could start games out West earlier, which is an interesting thing because he says 50% of the television households in this country are in the Eastern time zone. So this is an East Coast bias thing. Half of the households are out here. This is a ratings game. They have to play to these audiences. So it's going to suck for people out West if they're starting a game at 6 PM. But for a fan of an East Coast team, starting a game at 9 versus at 10 or 10:30 is huge because you can say, well, going to bed at 11:30 or midnight, I'm okay with that. I'll deal with it. But going to bed at 1 in the morning, you're like, ah, screw it. I'm going to bed at halftime or I'm not even bothering. So it's an interesting concept that they may be starting some of these West Coast games earlier. I don't know how it's going to impact the people out West, though.
So that's the interesting thing. And I think this isn't something that's going to be coming soon. But look, like you said, this is a ratings thing and it's a money thing. And that's kind of what drives a lot of the things we see, whether it's sports betting and sports gambling or what have you. Money's going to kind of drive how they need to look at things. And he had some interesting kind of data in it And he was saying, if you kind of look at it, it's like a sharp dive in ratings. He says, you're invariably going to lose a lot of viewers around 11, 11:30. I mean, you can just chart it. You can see how many television households turn off around 11:15, 11:30 at night, just because people have to go get up for work in the morning. And I get it, because you and I both kind of go through all of this. You know, the NBA, I think, tries to start at least in the home game market, like at the games usually start between 7 and 7:30. But maybe you need to move it up a little bit on the West Coast. And when you think about who it'll impact, it will significantly impact the people going to the game. Sometimes it's tough to leave work, make it to an arena. That might be a drive or a bit of a commute in an hour to get there for tip. But it might not impact the people watching at home as much. And I wonder if it'll impact the TV ratings out west. But it certainly is going to impact the attendance, you'd think, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think about – I know Lakers fans have like a little bit of a bad reputation. But that traffic in L.A. is a beast. And to ask people to get to a game for a 6 or even 6:30 start, they're not even getting there for a 7 or 7:30 start. And that's a lot to ask. And that's a lot to ask for people in any of those markets. A lot of people are still at work at 6 p.m. So asking them to leave and get to these games, that is going to be a tough hit. I don't know what the league is going to do for those fans, but at the same time, the attendance is really, if we're being honest, the least of the NBA's concerns.
That's not a huge driver of revenue. Like, they even for teams that make a lot of money off the gate.
Yeah, I don't want to say the NBA doesn't care about attendance, but it's not their top priority. Filling an arena is not their top priority. It's the top priority of the person or entity that owns the arena. But that impacts the concession sales. That doesn't impact anything that the NBA gets. The NBA gets a cut of the ticket sales, but I mean, in the Boston Garden, it's what, 18,000 people. Some arenas are what, 20,000.
Yeah. Like,
okay, so you get a little cut of that. That's nothing.
We are going to get yelled at by like Lakers fans and West Coast people, aren't we?
It's not that I'm advocating for this. I mean, but this is. Like, this is the reality of why this is being considered. Like, it's not an FU to the fans, but if you're looking at it realistically, he's telling you half the television households in this country are in the Eastern time zones. So if half your households are in the East, you have to play towards that group. And it sucks if you live out West. And it sucks that the NBA is going to be like, yeah, sorry, it's not our biggest priority to make sure that those seats are full. That's up to you. And it's up to the team to figure that out. But even like the Lakers don't make a ton of their money. Like the reason why the Lakers print money is because they have their own TV network.
Yeah, and it's the regional TV deals is where some teams, it's just insanely lucrative.
Like that's why when you talk about big market, small market, that's why big market teams make a ton of money. The Lakers print money. The Warriors print money. They're in major markets. They have regional TV deals. They just, I mean, soak it all in, and it's all there. The Memphis Grizzlies don't have the same regional TV money, so they don't make as much. That's why it's different. And again, the reason I bring it up is because it's not ticket sales. It's just not. And the thing that's going to hurt the teams the most is the perception if there's going to be a late arriving crowd and there's an empty lower bowl. But if they're trying to figure out a way to get those ratings up, and this is entirely driven by ESPN and Turner, because they're the ones that have paid billions of dollars for the TV rights. And if those TV ratings suck, then those TV rights aren't worth what they're worth. And if those TV rights aren't worth what they're worth, then the next TV deal is not going to be as good. And then what ends up happening, the salary cap goes down because the basketball-related income gets slashed. So I hate to say it, even Lakers fans, you want this to be fixed somehow, because what you don't want is all of a sudden your cap to go from $109 million to $90 million, and oh crap, what do we do now? Because all of a sudden, all of these teams are going to be tax teams because the ratings sucked. Like it's all part of the same. Everybody's part of the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things I wonder if this is kind of in reaction to is the ratings for the Eastern Conference Finals that we're seeing. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I saw them. I'm not lying to you guys here, that they were down significantly. Part of it's because it's Milwaukee in there. I think the bigger part is that it's Toronto, because that is a team that doesn't count for ratings in the U.S., I think, when you look at some of those Nielsen numbers. But also, we've been here before with this team going far, and it hasn't kind of changed things. So it's kind of interesting to see, because this is coming at a time when maybe you've got to wonder if maybe he's saying some of this somewhat just to kind of get through this bumpy period this year and the Eastern Conference Finals that we're seeing. But no, you're right. It's kind of this just large, big ecosystem that kind of feeds on itself in some weird way, because that is all part of the BRI number. Players are going to want this. Owners are going to want this, because it's just more money coming into the league when these TV deals come back up for renegotiation.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. You need that TV money to come through. Like, that's why the cap is what it is. So as much as it sucks, like, the alternative to this is your team doesn't have as much money to spend, and all of a sudden Things change. And look, the players are going to have to get on board with this. I'm sure the players aren't going to like starting games earlier, but it's very important for the league to make sure that this money keeps on coming in. I don't know if it's going to get offset by gambling. That's an entirely different conversation. They have other ways to make money, but this is a big deal. The ratings thing is a big deal. Milwaukee, Toronto, the two best teams in the East. It's a great series, but it's
fun basketball. But I get why, if you're like a casual fan, this is maybe not intriguing to you.
They're lucky that it's Giannis, and Giannis is like becoming the face of the league, and it's great to pump him up. It's not the biggest draw, and you're right about the Toronto ratings. Boston, Philly would have been a ratings bonanza, just with the rivalry between the two, Kyrie being in there, he's super popular. Embiid is super popular. Like, that would have been a different story. And look, LeBron leaving and LeBron not being the ratings draw, that was always going to happen. No matter what, there was always going to be a drop in the interest. Getting Giannis, if I'm going to make my own counterpoint, maybe getting Giannis and putting him in this position and having him be on TV in these finals, maybe that's the thing that replaces a team. Cleveland's a small market team, but the Bucks could be bolstered by Giannis's star power. So there was always going to be a dip. Maybe there'll be a comeback in the coming years, but whatever it is, they definitely need to address the ratings issue.
Yeah, it's something that's going to be far in the future. I don't think this is going to change anytime soon, but it's something to kind of keep an eye on, because it does have, like you were saying, far-ranging impacts throughout the league. So we'll see where that goes coming up in the future, and I'm sure we'll hear more about this. So before we move on to some quick hits and updates going on around the league, today's show is also brought to you by Grip 6 Belts, where their goal is literally to make the best belt that's ever been made. Grip 6 is an easy, thoughtful gift for dads, brothers, husbands, uncles, grandpas, even moms and wives with their women's collection. Ultra lightweight with no holes, no flap, and it carries a low profile with the buckle laying flat against your waist, making the belt super comfortable. Grip 6 is the only belt with no holes, no flap, no bulk. They are awesome. I wear these to work. I wear them out on the weekends. These are really cool things. You should get them too. Grip 6 also has a special offer for Locked On NBA listeners. If you go to grip6.com, that's grip6.com/LOCKE, Grip6.com/LOCKE. They've got a special offer there for you, so make sure to check it out. All right, John, we had the all-rookie teams released today, and I think when we see this, no real surprise. You have Luka Doncic on the first team, Trae Young, DeAndre Ayton, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Marvin Bagley III. And if you guys are scoring at home, that's the top five picks in the draft this year. Then you've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from the Clippers, Colin Sexton, Landry Shamet, Mitchell Robinson, and Kevin Werder from the Hawks. Does this seem right?
I'm fully on board with this. I think they nailed it. First time since the 1984-85 season that the top five picks in the draft all made the first team all rookie. And that was the only all rookie team back then. So Doncic and Trae Young, both unanimous. That made sense. Ayton made sense totally. You could look at some of the, I don't know, maybe Gilgeous Alexander. I don't think you can really make too much of an argument for any of these second team guys. I like the picks. I think they got it right.
Yeah, when you look at the next closest guy, which was Bridges on the Suns, it was kind of quite a bit of ways from making that second team. What I thought was also pretty funny was Miles Bridges of the Charlotte Hornets was maybe one of the better defenders from this rookie class. He even tweeted out, "I should not be on there. I played like ass all year long, and I'll be better next season." Good self-awareness, dude, on all of that. And I'm glad we don't have to deal with more like rookie of the year controversy, because I'm assuming you're in agreement with me here that Doncic is winning this.
What?
Shocking, no, I know.
No. Yeah, yeah, I'm on board with that. Trae Young made a nice late charge. I mean, he really vaulted himself into the conversation. But I think Doncic from beginning to end was definitely worthy of the rookie of the year.
Yeah, it's a complete season award. Trae Young, like, finishing second in this is not like a knock on a guy. Trae Young had a tremendous rookie year. It was just Luka was better from start to finish. So yeah, this just seems right. Cool. We don't have to like argue about awards, which is also like really nice. Other big news of the day is the Trailblazers and head coach Terry Stotts have agreed to a multi-year contract extension. Good move?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, keep this thing going. Keep rolling with it. It worked. I think that Stotts could have done maybe a little bit more creatively to get Damian Lillard going in the series against the Warriors, but at the same time they're facing the Warriors, who were gearing their entire defense towards making sure that Lillard wasn't going to beat them. So I think for the sake of the continuity, I think for the sake of locking up a good coach, like who are you going to get that's better than Terry Stotts right now? If they weren't going to give him the extension, I think there'd be probably a handful of teams that would line up to fire their coaches to bring him on. So definitely a good move.
Yeah, he's got a record of 325-249. He's led them to 6 straight playoff appearances in his 7 seasons there. He was kind of on the hot seat going into this year, which in hindsight looks kind of crazy after that first round sweep at the hands of the Pelicans last year, where they played some pretty uninspired basketball. But for them to kind of rebound the way they did with largely the same team and kind of go on the run that they did, like, I don't know. He looked really good. Yeah, you would have liked to see him a little bit more from him in the playoffs, maybe. But yeah, you're right. They're not going to get a better head coach than him right there, and it just makes a lot of sense to kind of just keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. So congrats to Terry Stotts, and congrats soon to Damian Lillard for getting his Supermax extension. So good luck to the Blazers. It could be interesting to see how they rebuild that team around the Blazers, because they're going to be very expensive and very familiar with each other. And I agree with the running it back. There is some risk in running it back, that some of the stuff that has worked, they, I don't know, sometimes it doesn't carry over quite as well. So I agree with the moves, but it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, like there's no reason not to give Damian Lillard that Supermax deal. And like, you have to, particularly in that market where you're not getting big name free agents. But I get it. It's like, it just feels like almost they've hit that like glass ceiling of what this team is going to be. But 6 straight playoff seasons and some deep runs in the playoffs, and a star player who wants to be there and has kind of embraced the city and is embraced by everyone there. It reminds you of like Memphis. It's still just been a huge success, even if they never win a title.
Yeah. It's the more I talk about it, like I really want to do a deep dive on the Blazers and how they're going to rebuild their team, because You've got in Dame Lillard this great player, but at the same time, he's one of the smaller guards. And it's this is a conversation that I've heard a couple of times. The smaller guards in the playoffs tend to have like a harder time, with the exception of like a Steph Curry. I don't know. Obviously you're going to give him the Supermax, but also obviously the Blazers are getting expensive and they're getting expensive fast.
Yes.
And it's going to be, there are a couple of things at play, not to drag this out, but the amount of money that they're going to pay for a team that I don't know how much better they're going to get is going to be interesting. But also at the same time, it's going to be very interesting to see what Kevin Durant does and where do the Blazers fall in that hierarchy in the West if it's the Durantless Warriors, who obviously still have Steph, Clay, and Draymond, but the supporting cast is getting older and not as good. You're not going to get the same thing from key players like Iguodala and Livingston next year. Like that infrastructure, you've got the solid base, but the surrounding part of it is starting to fall apart. So the Blazers may just think, like, by sheer destruction of the Warriors, that they have an opportunity to be in that mix. And then you never know what'll happen.
Don't forget, they're a luxury tax team too. I think it's their first year in, and I think they ducked below it the season before this one. So they're not in like that getting towards the repeater threshold, but they are a luxury tax team by about $9.5 million this year. That's a lot of money you're paying for this roster and this team, huh?
Oh my God. Look, they're committed to just in Lillard and McCollum. They're committed to $56 million next year and $60 million the year after, and then Lillard's Supermax will kick in. They're also paying $18.5 million to Evan Turner. They're also paying, they're also paying $11 million to Myers Leonard. Like, Myers Leonard had a great Game 4, but like, he also had a ton of DNPs. Like, it's not like he's earning that $11 million. They've got decisions to make, a lot of decisions to make. And when you get that expensive, it gets harder to put the supporting cast together. And when you're continuing to be good but not great, your draft picks aren't particularly good. So they're going to have to figure out a way. Like, one of the challenges that they're going to have is there an opportunity to trade somebody for good young picks? That one of the hallmarks of a very successful team is the ability to get young players on rookie contracts or cheap contracts to outperform their deals for multiple years while your max guys are doing what they do. You know, like Kyrie was when LeBron came back to Cleveland. A lot of these teams have good young players who are outperforming their deals, and the Blazers just don't have that. They have Lillard and McCollum who are earning their money. They have Nurkic Nurkic was the guy who was outperforming his deal.
Yeah.
But then after that, you know, Rodney Hood did for a short while, but now what are you going to do with Rodney Hood? What kind of money are you going to throw at Rodney Hood? Are you going to be able to keep Seth Curry? There are a lot of questions of how the Blazers are going to be able to put the supporting cast around them, or around Lillard and McCollum. But back to the original point.
I was going to say, at least they've got the guy to lead them, right?
Yeah, you know, you've got the basic building blocks. Now you've just got to fill in the blanks. And who knows? All it takes is hitting on one free agent signing, and you use that mid-level exception the right way, or you get creative and swing some sort of trade. Maybe somebody is willing to take Myers Leonard and give you something worth something, and you sell high, then you go ahead and get the things that I was talking about. But it's going to be a challenge. There's no doubt about it. The Blazers it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes, but they got Terry Stotts there for the foreseeable future. They'll have Damian Lillard there for the foreseeable future. That's at least good. So those are the big updates for today. Are there anything we're missing?
I did mention before that the Warriors, the collective Durant Warriors, are really, really, really making sure that Kevin Durant gets the message that we like you.
We want you here.
We need you. We're not better without you, because the narrative around the league that some people are trying to build is the Warriors are better without Durant. And they're going to need Kevin Durant against one of these other two teams, especially if it's going to be the Bucks. They're going to need Durant. They're going to need a guy who can go create his own offense that even Steph Curry, as great as he is, can't do. Especially, like I said, against that Milwaukee Bucks length. They are very much making sure that Kevin Durant, who is on social media and publicly fighting all of the idiots who are saying better without you, the Warriors are making sure that Kevin Durant knows none of this is coming from us. We all love you. We need you. Even Draymond Green was like, it's BS that this other stuff is being said. Like, they're every one of them to a man is making sure that Kevin Durant feels the love.
Yeah, it's like re-recruiting through the media or something, because I think they kind of realize some of the stuff they said. You know, it's like when you're talking about someone and you don't necessarily mean it like negatively, but they're going to interpret it as negatively, which is kind of all those things they said when he went down injured. And Steph Curry's like, oh yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. It's like, yeah, that's kind of insulting to Kevin Durant, and he's certainly going to take it as such. So maybe you need to kind of walk this back a little bit. And that's what they're doing, which makes sense. Like, do they need him for the finals against one of these teams? Like, maybe, maybe not. Is he kind of a luxury? A little bit, I think. You know, they're still the Warriors, and you still kind of look at them, and they are so good.
Sure.
But if you have him, you're not upset, and it's going to make the job better, easier for everyone. So you do it, and then you'll definitely win, and then it kind of ends all questions. So, yeah, certainly how they're kind of going about it, re-recruiting him, which is smart. They should want him back.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
As simple as that, yeah. Everyone should want Kevin Durant.
You should want – like, they're more fun to watch without Kevin Durant because they have to move the ball. And some of the things that makes them really great is, like, you need to play a style that I love to watch anyway with the ball movement. But that's the only way to do it without Kevin Durant. Like, you run a pick and roll with Curry and Draymond, and two people blitz Curry because you can't have him beating you from three. So he gives it up to Draymond, and then Draymond's making these amazing passes. And it's really beautiful to watch. But it's still like Alphonso McKinney on the other end of some of these plays. You know, like, those guys are really stepped up, but having McKinney off the floor and Kevin Durant on the floor, like, you can't tell me, like, oh no, they're better with McKinney on the floor. Like, come on. So, but what doesn't happen is you don't have the same ball movement because Durant's one of the best isolation players in the world, so he goes and isolates and gets his own shot.
He can get a shot off over anybody because he's not really worried about any length in front of him.
Right. He's like Durant's not the guy who's going to be running off of five screens like Curry does. And Curry's not going to be running off of five screens with Durant because Durant's got a mismatch almost every time on the floor. So it's a different style of play, and it doesn't get the best Steph Curry games all the time, so there is sacrifice on the other side from some of these guys. But at the same time, when Steph Curry is being hounded by length, which again the Milwaukee Bucks, if they advance, have ton of, then you're gonna need a guy like Durant to go get you those shots. Like, people forget that Curry has had problems in the playoffs with defenses that have been geared directly towards him, especially if there's length. So as great as he is, having a guy like Durant as a guy that can just go be the mismatch and impossible to guard is super, super important. So,
yeah, makes a ton of sense. And again, they should want him there because he's Kevin Durant and he is that good. So that's going to do it for the Wednesday edition of Locked On NBA. Big thanks to Hotels.com, Untuck It, and Grip Six Belts for sponsoring today's show. Check them all out. I highly recommend all of those three things. And don't forget to subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast through the Himalaya podcast app. They got personally curated playlists giving you the content you want. So go to your app store, download Himalaya, and subscribe to Locked On NBA. As always, on Wednesday, I'm Jake Madison at Nola Jake on Twitter and the host of the Locked On Pels podcast.
I'm John Corrales at Reds Army _ John on Twitter and co-host of the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back with you all next week.